What I wanted to talk to you about was about the women's local here in Baltimore, and also how you happened to run for the General Executive Board. And then there were some things about the Women's Bureau within the union that I wanted to ask you about.
Well, they haven't got no women's local here in Baltimore.
Well, there was one, though. Weren't you in a women's local?
Yes, was in a women's local. One homemaker's local, then that was a woman's local, and then it turned to be a general thing with men and women and everybody.
Oh, when was that? Do you recall? How long did it seem to last as just a women's local?
Oh, it lasted a long time. Oh, God, I've been in the organization since 1914.
And when did the women's local itself
start? And that's when the women's local started at that time. And then it went all the way through. In 1920, I was elected for General Executive Board. I was the women's local. And I think sometimes in 1925 or 26 that it emerged with the other local.
Tell me a little bit about the women's local here. I know about the local in Chicago, and it was very active in the women's.
But there's no women's local here.
No, in those early days. In those early days.
Well, we had a good functioning organization, but they were mostly the buttonhole makers, see? And Dorothy Belanca and Dorothy Belanca and some of those girls are dead. And Dora Edlovich. And Sadie something. And there were two others. Oh yes, and Levin, Levin girl, and myself. Well, we were the officers, and around the local, we had nice local union, quite a lot of members, and we used to do organization work, and used to go to house and organize the people. Now, Dr. Belanca and I used to go out on a Sunday and rap at people's door. And, of course, in places that were Jewish, Dorothy wouldn't mind going or in there, but there were some people who were there, and they were anti-Jewish. So Dorothy used to wait outside and tell me to go in, and I would go and talk to them, and I would get quite a lot of them to agree, you know, and that's what the women's local had to do here. And of course, at that time, I worked in a factory, see, and so did Dorothy, and we used to discuss our affairs in a side alley on a stone. And after we discussed our business, side alley, well, then we used to know where to work. I worked at Strauss and Brothers, and I don't know where she worked, whether she worked at Schloss's or where, but that's where Dorothy worked. And then afterwards, Strauss and Brothers went out of business after the war. While the war was on, we had a wage board and a trade board, and I was on the wage board and trade board, the only woman. And Judge Moses was the arbitrator at Strauss and Brothers. And, of course, during the war, I couldn't do hardly any work because I had a bell of my own. And I know the tailoring industry from A to Z. So if there was any difference, a change of operation, I was called in, and they would take a time steady, and we would watch the people work. And then we would try to set a price on it. But we had to use very good judgment because some people are smart and they would lay down a little bit so the price would be good, see? And then when it was too high, then had to call them together because we did set an original price which we thought was right. So we told them. And off the bat, I told them, you thought you were smart, but you only hurt yourself, so now you go back to the other price.
Tell me a little bit more about the women's local itself, Mamie. What, when you joined the union, was the women's local already formed, or did you form it?
No, we had to form it.
Mm-hmm. And what was some of the reasoning behind forming a separate women's local?
Well, we thought that you had to unionize to get better conditions and better price for
but
your
what,
work.
What was the idea of having a separate women's local instead of just having them join the
well,
other
local? But I couldn't tell you why, because buttonhole makers also always were considered somehow or rather more advanced than what the other people were, see? But when we had these, I worked in Strauss's, and when we had these large, big Ulster overcoats, and they were real thick, I think that they were for the army or something. And at that time, it was before the war, yet they were making them. And our fingers would split, and that hairy stuff would get in them. Mm-hmm. So I went downstairs. See, I was a chairman of the buttonhole department. We had 40 girls. And I went down there. I called up Mr. Strauss, and he was in. So man by the name Mr. Weigel was a man who was a super of the entire place management. So I went down, and I told him that we didn't want to make those overcoats, and even if they would give us more money, because it interferes with our fingers, they should put them on a machine, have mm-hmm. the machine made. And he got very nasty with me, and I went down there with another girl, and he got a hold of my arm, and he shook my arm. He says, well, if you don't want to make a fight at this price, well, you get the hell out. The whole shooting match can get out. So the other girl, she was more timid. She started crying. I was mad, and I was a fighter. So I went to work, and I come upstairs, and the girls came to me. There were some actors, Mary Kohler and other girls. They came, well, what did he say? And the other girl was in tears. I said, what did he say? He told us if he didn't want to make them for that price, or if he didn't want to make them, that we should get the hell out. She said, all right. She said, this ain't the first time that we can walk. Come on, let's get out, the whole gang. So when we went, the whole gang, at the same time, they had cut the factory 10%, which we didn't know. So when we started to walk, the whole place started to walk. So, of course, I was the one who had the stuff. So they put me, I forget the girl's name. She was a welfare worker here doing some work. And she got a hold of me, and she asked somebody to help me on the table. She says, she's the one. So we're going to get that plant now and get everybody in the union. So we were out on a short time, and I was on a picket line, and there was some rough stuff pulled off with some of them, but not too much. And the head boss, Eli Strauss, he was a wonderful man. I don't care if he was a boss or not, he was a head man. And he was a wonderful man, and he understood things. And so he come out on the picket line, and he says, Mamie, what seems to be the trouble? I said, Mr. Strauss, I said, look at my fingers, and come here, girls. I looked at our fingers, and I went to Mr. Weigel, and I told him he couldn't make them because that stuff gets in our sores and we get infected fingers. And he told me, he got my arm, and he shook me, and he cussed me, and he told me to take the shoot match, and I should get the hell out. I says, we don't talk that kind of language in my home, first place, and same thing, he has no business to shake me. And when I come back, the girls asked me what he said, and I just told them word for word. And he says, well, that is just terrible. That is just terrible. And he says, could we meet with you? I says, well, you could meet with me, but you got to meet with the head one of the organization here. We have, a manager for the national organization. So we called in the manager, which was Bloomberg, and then the Pasha chairman, and we had a settlement in 2 days.
At that point, there were only a few of you who were in the union before the walkout?
Yeah, it was mixed. It was a few men, maybe two or three men, and 5 or 10 maybe on some of the operations. Mm-hmm. But they all went to the union, but nobody knew how to start.
Mm-hmm.
They got a 10% cut. So when he asked us to go back, I says, we're not going to go back until you have this put on the machine and give these men back at what you took off, and they did.
But you were already in the union.
Oh, I was in the union. Mm-hmm. I belonged to the IWW.
Oh, you belonged to the IWW? I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
When did you join the IWW?
When I started to work. Part time, I started to go back to school.
What year was that?
Oh, God, I couldn't tell you. I was...
How old were you? Do you remember?
About 16.
Uh-huh.
And I had to go back to school. And then I come back again and started to work. and I got my permit, and I worked there.
Was that here in Baltimore?
Oh, yes.
And there was an IWW section of
needleworkers? Yeah, that broke right up. It was, and then we belonged
what
to...
What got you into that?
Then we went to the American Federation of Labor.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then we had... And that was... I forget what year that was that we had left.
Well,
we wanted the industrial organization, uh-huh. the amalgamated, and they wanted the CRAS.
Yeah. Well, that was 1914 when the amalgamated split off from
the AFL.
Well,
that's when I was with them.
Before that, though? Or?
I was with them just that time.
Uh-huh.
And Dr. Blanca went to the convention. And I had to hold the fort.
Here?
Yeah. See? All that. And then after that... after that, of course, we had to do organization work and some of the people. And we had a settlement, you know, as I told you about the strike. Well, that what helped it.
Now, was the women's local, at the time of that strike, was the women's local already formed, or did everyone go into other locals?
No, a women's local was formed and still remained for a long, long time.
Were you involved in the formation of it, or was it already formed when you...
It just had started.
Uh-huh.
They had, it was Dr. Blanca... And what's her name, Levin? She lived in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of her first name, and I still like her so much. And then Sadie.
Now, did you feel that with a women's local it would be easier to organize the other women, or was it a way to get positions in the union?
No, we got the other people. The women's local didn't only consist in one shop. The people worked in other shops, too,
mm-hmm.
and these girls were members of the women's local. It wasn't only the one shop that mm-hmm. I worked in. That was Strauss's, that was New York Clothing House, that was Sonneborn's.
How large was the women's local?
How large it was?
Say, about the time of World War One.
Well, about 150.
Mm-hmm.
Close to 200.
See, what I'm curious about is in Chicago when they formed it. It didn't form until almost 1920 in Chicago. The women's local.
We had ours before 1920 because 1920 I was elected
mm-hmm.
for the national for General Executive Board of the Amalgamated Clothing Workers.
Okay.
I was the
well,
vice president.
Let me ask more about the women's local though, because when they formed it in Chicago, it seemed to be because the women weren't getting positions within. The joint board, and they weren't getting elected to the convention, so they became angry and decided to form the local. And I wonder what was sort of behind.
Well, maybe
the
this was the same. Maybe this was the same thing. They would go to the, they would have a grievance, and they would present it to the business agent, and she would take it to the joint board, and probably just die there, and nothing was done. And so I think that's the same reason. Why they formed the women's mm-hmm. local.
So they thought they'd have more power then?
Yeah, then mm-hmm. they had more power. And of course, you had to get around to the others, see? And then we had to, when we had this women's local, then we had to go to the other people, other shops that were not unionized, some
mm-hmm.
of the smaller shops, you know, you had people that you didn't have just buttonhole makers,
mm-hmm.
you had other people, you wanted to get them into the organization. So we used to go on a Sunday and Saturday with Dorothy Blanca and Sadie and it's on my tongue, but I can't think of her name.
But was the idea that as women you would find that other women would more likely join you than going into a mixed local?
Well, they would go, the men decided if they weren't buttonhole makers they had to go into their local. You know?
Mm-hmm.
If they weren't buttonhole makers they had to go into their local. And then they had so many locals. They had the Italian local, they had the baster's local, and then they had the presser's local, and they had all locals. And then after that, that was all combined mm-hmm. into one.
Mm, I see. But in the women's local, some would be buttonhole makers and some would be...
Nobody else in the women's local was all buttonhole makers.
Oh, the whole women's local were buttonhole makers. I see.
About 158, 170.
Oh. So you wouldn't go, for instance, to a shop where and organize the other women into the women's local. They would go into...
I would go and organize them to join the union. And they would go into
whatever local was...
Yes.
I see.
See, the felling, the girls that used to fell.
Yeah.
See, See, I used the numbers. Then when we had the wage board, we organized that shop, that big shop. Well, then I was a member of the wage board on the board of trade, and we used to meet, I think, every 2 weeks. And sometimes when something came up, a big dispute, why we wouldn't meet sooner. And then I represented not the buttonhole makers. And also when I was a national officer, I didn't only represent the women, I represented the
men. See, the reason I was asking was because in Chicago, the women's local was mixed. It was all women, but they weren't all just one kind of operation.
I know.
How about the other cities? Like Philadelphia had a women's local, I think, and Rochester?
No, Philadelphia never had no women's local. I organized Philadelphia with Sidney Hillman, although I never got any credit for it, just as usual. I don't know. I worked there and I asked a girl, Pauline Kasdan, who was a secretary in Cleveland office, and she left and I asked to get permission because she was quite union-minded, and I asked her if she would come and help me, you know. So I was the only one in Sidney Hillman, and then they got a lot of Chicago boys to come over. Because Chicago had the funds, had the money, and Philadelphia didn't have nothing, only scab shops. And they had one shop, Darrow's. They had, say, one man was a pocket maker, and he was a subcontractor. They had subcontracting. And this man would get a wage, and he would go home with over $200, $240 a week. And he had about seven girls that belonged to one mother, to one family, and they paid her $7 a week. Well, you know, 7 fives are 35, and when $35 was brought to this Italian mother to home, she thought she had a lot of spaghetti, you know? And you could never sell a union. Yeah. You couldn't go in front of the shop, because the shop, in front of the shop, the boss would go to work and fire her. Where am I got a job to give to that poor girl? So you know what I done? I didn't get credit for none of that, nowhere. I went to work, and I started... The organization knows, and Sidney Hillman knows, and they all know it, those that were there. A lot of them are dead now. I started classes, and one day I would be in this house with some girls that I knew, and I would show them how to make lampshades. I would show them how to do vases and fire them, and I'd show them how to make trays. I'd show them how to make flowers, show them how to bead bags. I used to have a group, see? And these groups would tell me about the $7 a week, what the big padron got, you know.
They were all Italian?
Yeah, most of them Italian padrons, what they got. And, but these girls weren't allowed to go out for themselves because the times were very strict. So the mothers would get in a huddle in another room, and I don't know, they're cha-cha-cha, whatever they're talking about. The girls were talking to me. And I said, well, see, that's where you're wrong. That's where you're wrong. If you would join the union, we could take all that up. We break up that sub-boss, and you're working for him. He's taking your labor. You deserve more than $7 a week. Don't you see that? But what can anybody do with you? You got to come and help me. And today they can't fire you. It's the law. You have a right to belong to the union. So what's the matter with you? Oh, gee, that sounds good. That sounds good. So they say, sign. Some of them sign. Then they got the others to sign. And I try to get the major operation. What is a basting pole? I don't want her. I want a collar maker, I want a sleever, and I want an edge baser. Well, I got around it, we got them all right. Well, then Sidney Hillman come over and says, well, how does it look to you, Mamie? That shop, I said, that looks fine to me. I think they could do it, but I don't know what the men, because men had to take care of the men. Says, well, how are we going to get them out? What are you going to do? Because a subcontractor worked with the blackjack in his upper sleeve, and if anybody would have got up to him, one union, bingo, you know? So everybody was scared of death. It was like a prison. So I said, well, I don't know, Hillman. I says, I only know one little Italian boy. But, you know, if the boy gets arrested, we have to do and take care of, because I don't want these Italians come and lynch me. I said, and then I think we're going to give something to the boy, too. It's a young boy. I don't think he has anybody, too many people. I don't know whether his mother or father's here. But he's a nice boy, and he's on the picket line every day and talks to me. I can get him. Well, how are you going to get him to do it? I says, of course he can't stand up, because he'll hit him with a blackjack. So I says to this Tony, we want to do that? I'll try, Miss Santora. I says, look, they may arrest you before you get out of the building. You go, and somebody be right down there to bail you out. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. And look, I'm going to give you $100, but you got to do this for me. And all the stuff was on one floor. One part of it was coats, other part was this, other part was pants. So I gave him a real loud whistle, all real loud. And I told him to get on his knees. He's rather short. And I said, you go like that, you blow it over there, and you go over there, and you go there. And all the men knew that it was set for 10 o'clock, so they all flew out. And the girls that I had in this place, you know, that I had all these shops in, working with them, all lamps and all that, well, I was outside, and I looked like they're from a tree, and all the birds are coming to the tree. So we had cars and things, and we marched them down to the headquarters, and we spoke to them and all, and we had quite a strike. And we pay them benefits. I pay them benefits quite a bit. And it was quite a tough day. But we gave them luncheon. Every day they got lunch. Anything free. And they got benefits and all. And then the employer sent a word to me and to another fella that if we send them back, that he will give us $18,000, and I wrote back, you have many people who would stoop to this dirty deal, but the Amalgamated has few, and I'm very proud to be one of them. Thank you. I don't offer stuff like that. And Belia was a man's name, Belia, that was with me. And so then they had to go up and get there. So then in about 3 days, we had a settlement. Him. And he settled, the people went back to work, and all right, he got an increase in pay, that was one shop. Then we had another shop, Mekarensky, it's the same thing, big shop, North Philadelphia. And there I had Kritsky with me, Leo Kritsky, who was from Milwaukee, also from somewhere around Chicago. And he had a powerful voice. He would talk to them, I would talk to them, and give them benefits, and give them lunches. Anything. Now comes Saturday, first Saturday to get their pay, you know. And if they would go up there, the boss of Pannenberg, they will, Johnny, you was a nice boy. But when you want to listen to them people, don't listen to that gal, don't listen to that people. I always like you. You come back, I give you $5 more every week. Later on, I give you more. You come back. I knew him that he would do that. So I called in Hillman. I said, Hillman, we got to do something because Monday I won't have a single person at all. And it's not that I didn't put the work in it. And he said, well, what do you want to do? I said, it's going to cost you money. And so he says, all right, it'll cost the money. Then what do you want to do? I says, well, I like to get about, I will say, maybe 100 cabs. Yeah. And I'm going to Kritsky, and this big meeting is there, and all the people's in this meeting. And he's going to be talking to them, and I want those cabs to come one by one. And these people should go in this cab and go up there and get their pay. And then up there will be a committee. And when they get the pay, they should go right home. And I says, I want the taxi cabs to be all lined up. It'll be maybe 100, 125. And Hillman smiled. He laughed. I says, well, I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. No, you're not crazy. And so I said, well, it might cost you $400. I don't know what they're going to charge you for the taxi cab. What do you care? I said, I went to Sarah Friedman. She's dead now, too. See these people in there? So Sarah Friedman says, Sarah, I want you to give Mamie all the money that she asks for. And so I ordered the cabs. So she ordered the cabs, and there was a meeting, and there was a committee out, and there would go five in each cab. Imagine going up Market Street. It was crabs left on the road, that parade of yellow cabs.
So you went from the union in the cabs for them to get their checks?
To get their pay.
And then the cabs waited for them and took them home?
No, they had to get out and go home. Once they got the money and they got out, they went home. So they didn't go back there anymore. No, none of them didn't go back. So the boss says, my God, they give them benefits, they give them lunches, give them a ride in a cab to come up here. So what? So he went to work and got a hold of me and got a hold of Hillman and a couple more people from Chicago. And they had a meeting and they settled. And when the two settled, you know, then the other ones, we didn't have so much trouble anymore.
Well, Mimi, were you officially working as an organizer for the union? Were you a paid organizer?
I was paid.
Were you already on the General Executive Board at that point?
Yes, I was on the General Executive Board.
Oh, so then you also worked as an organizer.
Yeah.
Let me ask, in terms of going back to the women's local.
1920, if this is strike what I'm talking about, that was 2 years before 1920.
Mm-hmm. 1918.
1918, 1919.
But were you still in the shop then, here?
Oh, I was in the shop. They took me out of the shop. I was out of the shop before that. I was out of the shop when Strauss is liquidated, and I worked as a secretary and treasurer in the Bulmer John Board.
Oh, I see.
Amelia Kennedy. And that time they were on Caroline and Bolivar Street, and I was there about with Amelia Kennedy. I worked there for about 2 years.
Oh, and then you would go out organizing?
No, I didn't. Of course, we had a lot of people, and sometimes we worked in that office till 8 o'clock.
Oh.
And it happened so that Hillman came in one time, and he gave me the difference. He says, you work for better things in life, and this is what you're doing. He says, get another girl in here. That's all. That's all. That's all. You got to get it. I don't care. We get the money. Get another girl in. Mm. Part-time girl. You go away to the general board meeting, and you wait sometimes a week, and actually accumulates. You get a girl in here. Get a girl in here. So we got a girl, and we paid her $40 a week, and she did the posting, and they used to bring the money in. It wasn't a check-off system then, you know.
Mm.
And then she had to check it up, and then...
Well, but when you went to Philadelphia, were you still working as the secretary-treasurer?
No. I was then an organizer.
For the union at large, not for the local?
No, not for local. For the union, for the general office.
Oh, out of Chicago?
No, out of New York.
Oh, they'd already moved to New York by then?
Oh, they were always in New York.
Oh. Mm.
Always.
Even
in
though?
1914, they were in New York.
Mm-hmm. Now, maybe when you said before that, you know, that you really were responsible for organizing Philadelphia, but no one ever recognized it, do you think, though, that that's part of what motivated the women to form the women's locals, that they weren't getting the recognition because they were women?
I don't know. I don't know. I never heard anybody about it, but I knew that when I ran then for the General Executive Board, I know after the routine was all done, like Hillman called, they called me, and they said, you'd worked so hard. He says, would you like to go to Europe? And they would have paid my trip. But I don't know, somehow we had sickness home. And I said, no, I don't want anything. And at that time, I was so conscious, you know. I thought that it was doing it for the welfare of the people. I never knew it was a business. And I done it, you know, wasn't asking for anything. And then after I found out that it really was a business affair, and I don't know whether in the answer to that is Chicago. They were, I was running for the board, and what's his name, Mr. Bloomberg, came to me and told me that I shouldn't run. And
why did you decide to run for the board initially? How did that
happen? Because they should have a woman on the board.
See, that was, you were very conscious of that, but you thought that they should have a woman
on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And so was Dorothy.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. We all want to have a woman on the board.
And did you, all the women decide among themselves that who it should be?
No, yes. And then they said, no, I was elected by a referendum through the whole organization.
I mean, did you and Dorothy and women in other cities talk about it and decide that you could be?
Yeah, Sarah knows
run?
About it. They all know about it, yeah. Yeah, and I, 1920, then I was a member of the National Office, General Executive Board, and I served 15 years. And then when the strike came on in Philadelphia, well then, after this, I worked like a dog, and nights and days, so forth, that we had the colored fella. We went to a girl that was going to get married, and she was one of the really helpful person to me and to the whole business and her family. There were about two or three, and helping organize the place. And then she had, they celebrated the day before she got married. You know, they had music outside and they all marched in, and it wasn't a wedding, it was just a celebration. So they invited us, and the Chicago Boys were there, some of them, and Pauline Kessler from Cleveland, which I got to help me and myself, and we stayed at the Young Women's Christian Association in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And because we didn't know, and the men stayed in the hotel up the street. I forget what's the name of that hotel. And we had a grand time, and oh my, and we got all those people that were there, you know, from the different places, and we knew all about the union then. That was a great
help. What year was that?
Yeah, I was there.
What year was that?
Well, that was before 19, just about 1920.
Before you were elected to the General Executive Board?
No, I was a member.
You were already in the
General Executive Board. Yeah, I was already.
Now, tell me about.
I was in General Executive Board then about 4 years, I think, and then this girl, you know, she came over to me and she says to me, "We're going to have a good time and she's going to get married and you got to come and bring everybody." And so the Chicago people went to this affair, and we went to that affair. And then we stayed, we had a grand time, and we came home, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. And then Pauline Kastner, see, I was a member of the board then, and we went to just get ready to sleep to go to bed. And good Lord, in the back of the place we stayed, the Women Christian Association, why, there was a colored fellow who climbed up the steps, and across the street was a nightclub, and they saw this man climbing up, and so they notified him already downstairs. But we didn't know that. But then he was upstairs, and the window was open, and he jumped into the room. And this Pauline, she saw him, she jumped in from the bed with her hands up and started screaming all up. And I says, "Oh, Pauline, what's wrong? What's wrong?" And I look, and before that, she told me her leg hurt her from dancing so much. So I got her some alcohol to rub her foot, and I thought, well, it should be all right now. And we started trying to go back to sleep, and then when I saw this coming, I still had that bottle of alcohol standing there. I took that bottle of alcohol, and I just threw it right at him. And then the police over up there and everything, and we called downstairs. They said, we know, just keep quiet. And they chased him all through the place, you know. And he jumped through the window, and he broke the front door window, but they got him. And then they asked me if I want to appear against him in the morning, and Sidney Hillman told me not to. So I didn't appear against him at all.
Mm-hmm.
So then I don't know how the case was then at all. And see, that was when we were organizing that shop, see.
Yeah.
And they just done that because...
as a way to scare you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, but they didn't scare us.
Mimi, tell me more about, I'm interested in the way that the women that you and Dorothy Blanca, certainly, and some other women, talked about the fact that there was no women on the General Executive Board and you decided to run. Was there a lot of that kind of discussion?
Before that, before I was on the General Executive Board, they had Dorothy Blanca.
Mm-hmm.
Then Dorothy Blanca married, her name was Jacobs, and she married Blanca. And her husband was on the board. And so she felt that she was on the board already before, and she was not going to run. And I don't think Dorothy was really too well.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, well, she asked different girls and talked to different people about me, and they all said yes. And the general office and all the men all says, Mimi Santora would be a fine person to have. She's not very excitable, she's level-headed, and I think that she'll be very good to have. So then when I went out, I was elected to a referendum, and I got the most votes because they all thought I was Italian, and my name, you see, and of course other people who knew me. So Hillman says, tell me, how did you ever get that name, Mimi Santora, pure Italian name. Mimi, I says the word, a Jewish lady gave my mother to call me Mimi because she mother's name was Mary. My father would call Mary, then I would run too, so they call me Mimi. The Santora, I don't know where it originated, way back in 1600, I says, maybe. So we went and traced it back, and it did.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh. It was way up in northern Italy, the Genoese.
Oh.
Way up there, the blue and light haired people are.
Oh, so initially was Italian then?
Way, way back.
And the family moved to Czechoslovakia much later then?
I suppose so.
I see.
I don't know how.
But with the election, it was clear both to the other women in the union and to the men too,
yeah.
That there should be a woman in the position.
Yes.
But there wasn't any thought about maybe there should be more than one woman.
No, never, never. They thought always one was enough, and then they gave you a favor. I don't have to tell you. I don't know how it is now, but it always was. More was always expected of a woman. Always was.
Can you give me some examples of that?
Huh?
Can you give me some examples of how that
Sure, about pay. You never got the same pay as a man.
Mm-hmm.
That was enough
mm-hmm.
for you to get.
Do you think that that was part of the reason that the women's locals formed?
And then another thing was, they expected you to do more work. You have to get up in the morning. You got to get up and give leaflets out in front of the shop. You have to go to the printer and have them printed. You have to put them up and see what you want to say. Then you have to go to work and try to mingle with these people. Take a couple of them out to lunch and talk to them. You can't talk in front of the factory because they fire them.
Mm-hmm.
Now see all those things.
And the men didn't have to do those?
No. When did the men? Maybe some of them took them to lunch to get a drink because some of them told me you would see what they how little they eat. They don't have enough to eat. They drink just a Coke and it's their lunch.
Mm. Well, do you think that because the women, because that was so true, is part
women
of the reason why they formed the locals?
Women formed locals because they want to be recognized. And they wanted to have equal say as the men.
And that was very clear when they formed the locals that
yeah,
that's
what they were doing.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't mind raising their voice and getting up in a meeting and saying what they wanted to say.
So the first women who were involved in forming the locals were really very strong about it then, it sounds
yes,
like.
Yes,
because it seems like over the years the original idea of it changed a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Over the years it changed a little bit in that respect. You
that,
know less.
That the women weren't as angry about it, say, as were in the beginning.
See, now today it's all in one, and then when they call up the office, request for an operation, and if you got a person to send them, you'll give them a card and then go there, and they have a trial period of working, see if they if the firm likes their work, and you also have a right also mm-hmm. to see whether you like the position.
Mm-hmm. No, I meant among the women themselves, it seems that when they first formed the locals, it was because they wanted recognition.
Yes, they wanted recognition, and they wanted to have the rights in every way.
And would they talk about that specifically among themselves in the local meetings, the women?
Well, they would just talk about factory troubles.
But they wouldn't talk about how they felt they were
looked down upon
by the men?
No, they were talking. Yes, they did. They would present their case to the business agent, and the business agent took it up, or he didn't take it up, I don't know. And then when it went, then we had the wage and trade board, and some of the things went there, and then you had a person to represent them, and we had few people, and I represented men and women, but mostly women, and that's how it was. Now, when I was on the board at Strauss's, there's a difference in men's clothing. There's some coats that are quarter line like that, and then there's some of them that the lining is full only at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these girls wanted more money for the quarter line. Of course, you went around down and down like that, and then this way, and it slid up in here, and then go that way again. And they didn't give them enough money for that, and they tried to tell me and tell us that that was the same amount of work, this man Weigel and Strauss's. And we had Eli Strauss there, we had everybody there, and the men were there. But and men didn't seem, they would say, they'd say nothing, they just said to me, I had to fight my own battle, and I had another girl with me, and they looked like that I wouldn't get my case through to them. Kept on saying that one way is just the same as going around here and down here and then go over the end and then that way again. I said, you know, people are crazy. And I says, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. There's only one man that I trust in this building. And all the foremen were there, and I was the only one that I have faith in. And if he tells me that it's not more work, well, I don't want nothing. But who is he? us as a designer, Mr. Barberi. Mr. Barberi, yes, Mr. Barberi. He cuts that. He knows what that is when he cuts it. When the cutters cut it, he knows what that is and knows what that is. So they brought on Mr. Barberi. So the judge says, oh, Ms. Santora, speak to Mr. Barberi. I said, Mr. Barberi, I know that you're an honest man. And if you say no, I say I won't open my mouth again. We have a problem here which has to be solved. Here are a group of about 15 or 20 girls. Now we have half-line coats, we have full-line coats, and we have quarter-line coats. Now in process are the quarter-line coats. Mr. Weigel, who's a superintendent, says that it's just as much work on a quarter-line as there's on a full-line. Now, down a quarter-line, you got to go here, you got to go down this way, then you got to go from the end over there, here you got to slip, you got to do the slit all the way down, and you got to go then, and on the other side, same thing. And they tried to give the same price for that. Now tell me, is it more work or isn't it more work? He says, well, Ms. Santora, you're certainly putting on the spot. Of course there is more work. Of course there is not more work. So John, I thanked him very much. He says, and they said, well, Ms. Santora has getting big compliment. Very few people get that. She says, in this whole place, she only